Born in 1868, Seamus McManus immersed himself in the folklore of his home county of Donegal before bringing those tales to a wider audience, particularly among the Irish diaspora in North America. His books, like The Story of the Irish Race, magazine articles and lecture tours, found a devoted audience far beyond Irish shores, helping to shape how generations of Irish Americans understood their heritage. But while he was a key figure in the cultural revival of the early 20th century, his legacy has been somewhat overlooked in recent years. Our reporter, Mark McMenamin, has been finding out more.
He's an unusual figure in that he has a foot in both camps. He has a foot in the Anglo-Irish revival, the cultural revival of the late 19th and early 20th century. He also has a very solid footing in the Irish language revival.
He starts sort of instrumentalizing the Irishness that he derives from his Donegal background.
Seamus McManus, writer and self-styled Shanachie, was born in Mount Charles, County Donegal, in 1868. Educated in Enniskillen in nearby Fermanagh, McManus soon began to collect Donegal folklore from local rambling houses, which he eventually popularised to a huge extent through his published work in North America. This is Brian O'Connor, Professor of Irish Language and Literature at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana.
His first book appeared in 1893, and that was just when the Gaelic League was founded. So he was part of that wave. He moved in the same circles as Lady Gregory, as Yeats, as Douglas Hyde, as Owen McNeill. What distinguishes him is his presence in America, in American universities, and his great book, The Story of the Irish Race.
According to Breen, McManus's work, The Story of the Irish Race, gave meaning and a sense of history to the first generation of Irish Americans post the famine.
It's at a time where Irish America, Catholic Irish America, is beginning to find its voice. McManus is the voice of rural Ireland, the voice of the Irish revival in American universities, in American colleges. He's the one that speaks and represents Irish culture, Irish literature to the emerging, rising Irish Catholic middle class.
McManus's writing was hugely popular with the diaspora in North America. This is Chris Cusack, Professor of English Literature at Radboud University in the Netherlands.
In America, of course, people were very interested in Irish culture and also in the Irish revival as a sort of way that they couldn't link back to their own heritage. And we're really talking particularly about, you know, second, third generation migrants here, so not necessarily the people who themselves had come over from Ireland, but the people who were descended from, you know, people who came over from Ireland during the famine or afterwards. The Gaelic revival, the Celtic revival, really becomes a way for these people in North America to identify as Irish. And that is, I think, one of the reasons why his work was so popular, because at the time in America, there was a huge vogue for this kind of Irishness.
Great, noble, and beautiful truly was our Tara of the Kings. From the great heart and centre of the Irish kingdom, five great arteries or roads radiated from Tara to the various parts of the country. The Slieve Coulan, which ran toward the present County Wicklow, the Slieve Mór, the Great Western Road, which ran via Dublin to Galway, the Slieve Aisle, which ran near the present Mullingar,
McManus lectured widely in the United States, beginning in Notre Dame in 1903. Brian O'Connor.
He appears to have come to Notre Dame for the first time in 1903, and his connection was with Father Kavanagh, who was Irish-American, and Kavanagh took it upon himself to improve the academic standard of Notre Dame, to make it from a small college in northwest Indiana, dealing with first-generation Irish-Americans, the children of those who came over during the famine, and he wanted to up the standard, and he was concerned that Notre Dame was going to become only known as a football college.
McManus was particularly popular with university students, according to Breen.
The students at Notre Dame and other universities were very impressed and enamored with McManus as a storyteller, as a raconteur. He may not have been a world-class critic or academic, but he was the voice of the tradition. He was the voice of the folk culture in the west of Ireland, Donegal in particular. But he could marry that to a sense of cultural pride and cultural history.
Professor Chris Cusack.
He was very popular because of the Irish dimension, so because of that revivalist dimension, but also because he wrote local colour stories. And this is when the genre of local colour was really, really popular around Europe, the United States, Canada, etc. So in that sense, it wasn't necessarily the fact that he was Irish that was so interesting, but the fact that people were very interested in the way that he generated a sense of the region, a sense of the local.
These tales were made not for reading, but for telling. They were made and told for the passing of long nights, for the shortening of weary journeys, for entertaining of traveller guests, for brightening of cabin hearths. Be not content with reading them, and grateful be to the Shanachies who passed these tales to me, for you.
Seamus McManus's writing was very well received in the United States. However, he also maintained close links with Mount Charles, where he returned every summer and would tell his stories in the evenings at the local water pump, which today bears an inscription with his name.
I think that in terms of also the influence he's had in partly popularising this kind of Irishness in America, in the UK, more attention should be paid to him. And I think also, particularly the early kind of stories that he published, you know, there are quite a lot of stories though there that are very interesting. He also published a number of stories, for instance, that do represent a very Ulster kind of perspective, where he, you know, semi-satirically writes about mixed marriages in Donegal in the late 19th century, you know, a Catholic woman, a Protestant man, or vice versa, right? And he writes about this, you know, with a great sense of humour.
Seamus McManus passed away in New York at the age of 92 in 1960. He is buried alongside his first wife, the author Ethna Carberry, in Fosses, County Donegal.
From all accounts, he seems to have been a natural storyteller. He seems to have been able to convey to students the colour, the atmosphere, the feeling of Donegal. And remember, this is the first generation. So he is relaying and describing to people what their parents, grandparents had grown up with. He gave a narrative form to the history, to the origins of the Irish race. And it gave the Irish a story, an origin story, at a time when they badly needed it.
And that was Breen O'Connachar, ending that report on the life and work of Seamus McManus. And our reporter, historian and author Mark McManaman, joins me now in studio to talk more about this Donegal storyteller. Tell us a bit, first of all, Mark, about his early life in Donegal and the collection of folklore in, I think, what was referred to in the package as the Rambling Houses. What's a rambling house?
Well, thanks very much for having me, Miles. Yeah, McManus is a very interesting person. He was born in 1868 in Mount Charles, and it's important to make that distinction. In Donegal, we pronounce it Mount Charles, you know, as opposed to Mount Charles, which is an unusual Donegalism, but that's what it is. McManus was born in the area, the son of a local farmer, Patrick McManus, and his mother was from nearby Drumholm, which is a little bit closer to Donegal town. So that's the general lay of the land. And he was educated actually in Enniskillen, outside Enniskillen, first in Canalia and then in Enniskillen town. He was acutely aware of the kind of the folklore of Donegal because he grew up in it and he went to these rambling houses. So rambling, well, I suppose it was very well known in Donegal. I'm sure it took place in other parts of the country as well. Rambling was where you went to other people's houses for a ramble and you told stories by the fireside. But the unique thing about McManus was that he decided he was going to write these down. So after his education in Enniskillen, he started writing his stories down, initially first for the Donegal Vindicator or the Tyrconnell Vindicator, which was a very well-known weekly publication published in Donegal. It was actually published in my hometown of Ballyshannon, which was also where the Donegal Democrat was originally published as well. So he put in short stories, poems, cures and kind of local stories of fairies and folklore that he'd picked up from local people along the way, initially in The Vindicator, and then he transitions on then to publishing kind of nationally for a publication in Dublin called The Shamrock. And eventually then he starts writing for international publications. I suppose the biggest one and the first one that kind of brought him to a wider audience was Le Petit Journal. Through that, he was sent over on, I suppose, kind of an assignment to the United States, where he was to interview kind of prominent Irish business people and people that were involved in the burgeoning kind of nationalist movement there at the time. It's there that he has his great opportunity then to bring his stories to a wider audience.
Before he goes to the States, though, he struck up a friendship with one Porrick Pearce, who I think stayed with him whenever Pearce visited Donegal.
Yeah, Pearce stayed with him in Mount Charles when he actually visited Donegal, and the two of them struck up a kind of a great rapport. Actually, McManus was on the board of Scolenda. He was also involved in various other kind of, you know, nationalist movements. He was a founding member of the Gaelic League of the branch in Donegal. He actually organised the very first meeting, county board meeting of Donegal GAA in Mount Charles. He was involved in setting up local 1798 commemoration committee. And he was determined to kind of involve himself in as many ways as possible in all these sort of soft nationalist movements. It's interesting, in his later life, he kind of, you know, his relationship, I suppose, was a little bit strained then with Pearce as time went on. Pearce felt that, I suppose, when McManus was writing his stories in America, that they had wandered into the area of kind of paddywhackery, you know, as opposed to kind of articulating the cause, as it were, in Ireland. And he felt that kind of, in a way, demeaned the nationalist cause. So there was a kind of a falling out between them.
Tell us then about his publishing career in the US. He became hugely successful. And I mean, some of the magazines that he was writing for are extraordinary. Harper's Monthly, Cosmopolitan, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, he initially arrives in the United States to begin kind of lecturing in some of the universities. And he starts publishing his stories alongside that. He publishes kind of, I suppose, little extracts and pieces from these stories that he picked up in the rambling houses. And they're met with huge interest by the local people. And he realised as well himself that this is a fairly lucrative market. So he, you know, his output increased dramatically. I mean, it's been said that at one stage he was selling stories to some of these magazines for the modern day equivalent of about 10,000 euros a story. So he became quite wealthy through his work. That led him on then into the university scene, and I suppose the most famous university that he was lecturing in was the University of Notre Dame in South Bend in Indiana. And there's some very interesting kind of correspondence between himself and the students. And if you look back at the archives and you look at some of the student publications, they speak so fondly of McManus. The students were actually mad about him. A little quotation here from one of them in the Notre Dame Scholastic of the 6th of February 1904. They talk about a pleasant hour with a noted Irish storyteller. And Seamus McManus from Donegal, the author of several volumes on stories and a frequent contributor to many leading American magazines, has addressed the students in Washington Hall on the subject of Irish wit and humour. And seldom has there been seen a happier treatment of a person attending. You know, so he was held in very high regard by the students and the faculty there.
Not held in such high regard by the likes of Owen McNeill and W.B. Yeats. Yeats was pretty much doing the same kind of thing, but presumably wasn't making quite as much money out of it as McManus was. Was there a certain amount of economic or financial jealousy there, do you think?
There may well have been. I mean, Yeats was, you know, visiting the universities as well, but not with the same frequency with McManus. And he didn't stay for the same duration of time. You know, it might be a one-off lecture, whereas McManus would stay there for extended periods of time. And he would give series and series of lecture. He might give 10, 12 different lectures in a rotating process. And what happened was, through the publication of his books and the attention that he was attracting, and he was becoming quite wealthy, he kind of drew the ire then of some of his contemporaries. And, you know, perhaps it's a reason why he's not maybe as well known. His output certainly wasn't in the same academic vein or the same quality of literature as Yeats, but he was selling a lot more at that particular time, and that might have drawn the ire of them.
And, I mean, his books are still in print in the USA.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. It's quite difficult to get your hands on some of the books in Ireland, but you can get them in almost any shop in America, you know, in any popular Irish history section, in any kind of Irish literature section. They actually turn up quite a bit as well in kind of bargain bins, you know. You can get first edition books of Seamus McManus, of his many works, particularly the story of the Irish race, because it was a very important text in terms of giving the generation that came after the first wave of immigrants, it gave them a sense of identity and a sense of belonging and a sense of who they were at a time when they were trying to find themselves in North America. And that has been his legacy.
He was married twice. Tell me about his first and second wives, both very, very interesting women.
Well, his first wife, whom he married in 1901, was the famous author Ethna Carberry, and he was very devoted to her. Unfortunately, she died of gastritis. The two of them lived for a while, actually, in Revlin House in Donegal Town. And anyone that's been to Donegal Town will know where that is. It's a beautiful house that's on the Bank Walk that's looking out over Donegal Bay. And they lived there for a while together. When she died, she was buried in Frosses, which is just up the road from Donegal Town. Then later on in life, he marries the granddaughter of the first president of Venezuela, a lady by the name of Catalina Violante Paez. They married in New York in 1911. Her grandfather was General Jose Antonio Paez, who was first president of Venezuela. And they had two daughters together, Mariquita and Patricia. And the family is still, you know, living and working in the United States today.
And he did come over and back. He came, visited Donegal regularly. He doesn't die until 1960. So there were probably people around in Donegal who actually remember it. But he died at the age of 92, but not of old age.
No, he has quite a tragic ending. He dies at the age of 92. He fell out of the window of the nursing home in which he was staying in Midtown Manhattan. And it's quite a tragic end. There's very little kind of sources on, I suppose, on the actual exact nature of the death. There are some references to it in some of the New York newspapers, none that I have seen in some of the Irish newspapers. When he died, his body was repatriated then. He was brought back to Donegal and he was actually buried in Frosses alongside the body of his first wife, Ethna Carberry. Frosses is a little town where there's not a lot in it now. So you have the graveyard and the church in which he is buried on one side of it. Other side, you have a shop and a couple of houses, you know. Now, when I was growing up locally in Donegal, one of the local witticisms was that, you know, up in Frosses, one side of the town doesn't talk to the other. But I think that's very fitting for Seamus McManus because his books are full of wit. You know, he had some very witty sayings. You know, one in particular, it was that many's a man's tongue broke his nose. And another one that I thought was particularly humorous was, you know, that fella is as good as his word, but his word is no good. You know? So I think, you know, it's interesting that that's where he was buried.
Well, thanks very much indeed, Mark, for talking to us and for reminding us about Seamus McManus, the last Shanachie. And thank you very much for joining us on The History Show.
Thanks, Miles.